Hello once again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. On today's show, it's the Copyright Forum, always one of our most popular programs. And if you have a question, you better start dialing now. To answer your questions, we have a great panel in the studio. Paul Rapp is a man of many talents, specialized in intellectual property law, including copyright, trademark, internet, art, and entertainment matters. He's also adjunct professor of copyright and art and entertainment law at the Albany Law School. He also plays in a band, and he also writes columns. So he's unbelievable.
We think so.
Bill Westwood is one of the country's leading medical illustrators. I'll check that. Bill Westwood is the country's leading medical illustrator and a professional member and past president, get this, of the Association of Medical Illustrators. And Polly Law is an artist and illustrator. She runs an art studio, maintains a website at buttonwoodart.com, and she's just about to embark on a solo show on 100 and what street?
Sixth.
Sixth Street in New York at the
Julio Valdez Project Space.
Very good. Give us a call, everybody. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can also comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on your Facebook page, whatever that is, facebook.com/WAMC radio, or you can tweet your questions if you are a Robin. No, you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop, and you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Whew. Okay, so here we are, everybody. let the phone calls begin. Let me tell you, here's some subjects you might want to call us about. I wrote a poem many years ago, and I found somebody else had published it under their name. What can I do about that? Or I have, give us some other questions, guys, that might come up in today's question. If I want to copyright something, is the best way to mail it to myself?
Yep. There it is.
There you go, Alan.
So we've gotten that out of the way for this.
Yeah, the answer to that is no.
Okay. My parents did something intellectual, do I own that? There's an interesting question.
Only if it's been ceded to you in their will.
Right. And like
or
that.
No will.
Okay.
Or no will.
So actually, the phones are beginning to ring now. Our wonderful Colleen O'Connell is answering the phones. She's vetting each and every one of them.
Here comes one
right now. Jeffrey from Lenox, Massachusetts. Okay, Jeffrey, you're on with the panel. Go ahead.
Hello, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I give a sustainability presentation. It's really photo rich. I don't charge for it, but I'm thinking of translating that into print in book form. And I'm wondering what I need to do because I've just been pulling these photos off the internet. And I know there's copyright protection. And I haven't charged for it, but I'd like to earn a little bit of money on the book. So I need to basically start from scratch and what do I need to do?
Well, you've really opened a big can of worms here.
Yeah.
The fact that you're using these, number one, the fact that you're not charging for your presentation does not matter a bit.
Oops.
Yeah. The fact that you are pulling images off of the internet that you don't own the copyright to.
Right.
That's a big problem.
That's an infringement.
Yeah. I mean, you'll probably be okay for your presentations if they're, fairly modest. But in terms of a book, you're really going to have to either go and get licenses for the images or go take your own or, find something that's royalty-free out there. Because once you put them in a book, you'll be a sitting duck.
So basically, I need to find, the people who, took the photos, even if they're not, stock photos. And it could be as simple as my getting permission from them to use it, or they would charge a royalty fee, one-time use, or
you have to work that out in a contract.
Yeah, there's no set way. I mean, I think the important point here is that just because something's on the internet and you can download it, doesn't mean that it's royalty free or that there's not a copyright attached to it.
But how? So if I pull a photo off of an article on wind power, mm-hmm. and in that article, there's a photo of a small innovative turbine. I need to find the person who took the photo. It could be a bit of a search then, right?
Or the person that owns the copyright. It might or might not be the photographer in that case. It might be the author or the publisher of that article.
Or it could be someone like Associated Press,
right,
or Reuters, or,
right,
or Getty.
But yes, it is a problem. Unfortunately, somebody owns a copyright to that work, and your unauthorized use of it could really create a serious financial problem for you.
Okay,
also,
Polly, I'm so sorry. We got five people here. I want to give everybody a chance.
Well, yeah, thank you. It sounds like I have my work cut out for me.
I was just going to say that you really cannot reproduce images you pull off the internet accurately in a printed publication. The density of pixels is all wrong.
There's that too.
Oh, yeah. That's the other consideration. Well, thank you all very much.
Thanks, Jeffrey. Appreciate your call. Okay, and we'll go to Jim in Saratoga Springs. Jim, you're on.
Hi, Alan. Great show. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question regarding YouTube and being flagged with third-party content. I have purchased a subscription to a royalty-free, copyright-free site with video clips and sound clips. Every time I use one of the sound clips as an audio track for a video of original content, I get on my YouTube account, I get flagged for third-party content, and I have to go through a rigmarole with YouTube, even if it's just sending out a message that I purchased this from Video Blocks or wherever, Footage Firm. I'm wondering if there's a way to circumvent having to submit to YouTube every time this third-party content is detected.
Okay, before we continue, somebody on our expert panel has to take the, to me, somewhat complex question and let us all know exactly what the question is. On the panel?
I would think that you need to discuss this with YouTube.
No. We need to know, if we're out there, what his question is.
Oh, okay, he's subscribing to...
I don't understand, then a lot of people out there...
Okay. Jim is subscribing to a library that has audio royalty-free, where he's actually paid some money, and they said you can use all this audio for whatever you want. He's now putting it into videos, posting them on YouTube.
Oh, I see.
And YouTube has got little bots that run around, and whenever they find something that they think is infringing, they'll send a nasty gram to the person that posted and sometimes take his video off.
But how do you know? I mean, I watch YouTube all the time, and people have got stuff there from 40 years ago and 10 years ago, and Pete Seeger died recently, and everybody's got old programs Pete Seeger was on and everything. How, you mean every one of those people has to do what he has to do, which is to because those programs are owned by somebody.
Well, it's up to the copyright owner. I mean, someone posted my band's video with the heading "Worst 80s Video Ever."
Yes.
And
you're
famous. And I looked at it and I went, "Oh, geez." And then I realized there were like 300 hits in this long debate, in the comments section. I said, "Well, I'm going to leave it up there because it's great."
Yeah, it's publicity.
So, Jim, I think I would put that maybe in your comments that you have a license for all this music. And I don't know if YouTube will notice that or not, but you should say, I'm posting this with music that's under license. And then you're going to have to engage them sort of episode by episode and hope they figure it out.
And they ask him because they're afraid of getting sued themselves. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
And also because it's a revenue stream. If they detect third-party content, then they can put ads next to your video. They probably generate some revenue by leaving the copyrighted or in my case, the not copyright protected video up there. It's all my own videography. It's just that I put a soundtrack behind it.
And do you have your answer now? Because I have to move on.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Good luck.
Jim from Saratoga. Thanks, Jim.
Bye.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMT comes from Mohonk Preserve, New Paltz, presenting the Rock the Ridge 50-Mile Challenge for runners, walkers, hikers on May 3rd, sponsored by I Love New York and Ulster County Alive, rocktheridge50.org for registration. Snow Farm, Williamsburg, Massachusetts, a New England craft program offering workshops for adults and teens taught by master craftspeople on a 50-acre farm, snowfarm.org, St. Joseph School, Uptown Kingston, an Academy of Arts and Sciences, offering pre-K, elementary, and middle school placements for fall 2014, daily tours of the historic Uptown campus, joyful learning guided by faith, stjosephschoolkingston.com, and Step Up Presents, Rodrigo E. Gabriela with special guest Bobby Long, Saturday, April 26th, 8 p.m. at The Egg, Albany, Ticketmaster locations or theegg.org.
And we are back on the Copyright Forum with our wonderful panel. Okay, from Barbara. Barbara sends us a note over the internet at voxpop@wamc.org. If I write a book containing a medical assessment that I wrote, can I still publish it in another form? Barbara.
Yes, as long as you weren't an employee of someone else when you wrote it who might have owned the copyright via work for hire.
And okay. And there's the privacy issues, too. I mean, you certainly can't identify the person
that
you
did
the medical assessment for. Yeah. There's that. But, you know, I think generally, yes, it sounds like she's doing some kind of a memoir or a medical book. So even if it is owned by a hospital, it would probably be fair use, don't you think?
I think depending on the use. Yeah, I think so, it would be fair use. Yeah.
We'll go to our medical expert, Phil Westwood. Okay, let's go to Ed in Albany. All right, Ed, you're on.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. Can you hear me?
Yes, mm-hmm. And I appreciate your call. Go ahead.
My question has to do with the possibility of libel. I'm writing a memoir. I have every reason to expect it'll be published. Excuse me. But I'm going to say some, it looks like I'm going to say some nasty or unflattering things about people, which I believe to be true, but they may not see it that way. Am I facing a libel suit if I write the truth, or as I see it, using their names, or should I disguise their names?
Oh, boy.
We'll refer that to our resident attorney.
Yeah, I deal with this a lot with authors, and it's going to depend on who. It's going to depend on a bunch of things, but one of them is going to be whether the person you're writing about is a public person or a private person. You have a lot more sway with things that you can say about public people than about private people.
And the definition of public in this case is somebody who's injected themselves into the public eye?
Or has had the public eye injected into them, whatever that means. But, you know, so if you are famous and recognizable, and there's a whole body of law on whether or not somebody's public or private, so it's a gray area.
Politicians would fall into that.
Radio hosts?
Probably, yeah.
You know, and certainly if what you say is true or if it's your opinion, you're probably okay. That doesn't mean that somebody's not going to get angry and haul off and try to sue you. But
if you take this to a traditional publisher, their legal department may want to go over it with a fine-tooth comb first.
Well, I know a guy, just for a second to tell a personal story, who published a major book. The publisher would not publish it. Mm-hmm. I think he's suspecting that there were issues with it. Self-published. Guy calls me up. Major sports figure, let's just put it that way, and has devoted some time to me in the thing, in which he says some unflattering things. He sends me two pages and says, what do you think? I said, well, the first 10 are libelous, I sue you. After that, you know, you're a big boy, I'm a big boy, I can write what I want, and did. It's okay. But I won't like it, that's all. But I wasn't going to sue the guy, that's for sure.
Yeah.
You got to have money to sue people.
Yeah, it does. It costs something, and so at some points you're kind of pressing that tension on whether or not somebody's going to get angry enough and want to spend the money to come after you. But, you know, generally, if it's truth or opinion, you know, it's going to be okay.
Are the people you're writing about public figures, Ed?
Quasi-public figures. They're known within a small community and pretty well, within a larger community somewhat well. But I wouldn't call them public figures, not elected officials or anything.
Okay. Hey, Ed, thanks for the great call. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Let's go to Frank in Greenwich. One free phone now. Frank in Greenwich, you're on.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
I'm an architect, and as such, I do quite a bit of design work. And my question is not so much protecting what I come up with, because in a lot of cases, I really don't care if they get out in the public and people use them. What I'm a little bit worried about is that if I come up with an idea, which is often in like an assembly or something like that, or a way of doing things, or a way of making a join, or a way of constructing something that, you know, might be unique, is that I don't lose the use of that, or if somebody else, you know, decides to patent it or copyright it or something like that, how would I prove that, you know, a lot of things I have in journals and stuff that I've done years and years ago, and it's actually one of the reasons why I don't look at a lot of other things by other people, because I don't want to, you know, a lot of these are original works. They're not very useful besides maybe the individual building they're on. But I don't want to be prohibited from using them because somebody else comes up with them after I thought of it.
If someone devises something identical, but they have never seen your work, that's just happenstance. You have no protection from that.
Well, except for patent. Because I think you're talking here more about patent
right.
than copyright. So it might be copyright, but you're talking about really functional things. You
well,
know?
I'm talking about like a copyrighted design. I came up with a unique design for an emergency building. It's like a layout and stuff. And it's actually probably copyrightable.
The schematics are copyrightable.
Yeah.
Right. But the concept, the idea itself is not copyrightable.
But you've got documentation of when you came up with it, and if someone else decides to copyright, you can easily prove that you independently created it.
Well, that's sure the problem. I can't always do that. Published.
Oh, hold on a second, Paul. How do you assure that you have, because I think people can learn something from this, that they have, that you have documentation about when you came up with it?
Well, you'll have time-stamped, you know, or dated plans, and it can be forged, but why would you do that? The other thing you could do is register the copyright.
I was about to say, you just register the copyright.
It costs $35, and it doesn't take much time.
And how do you do that again?
It's $35 electronically, isn't
copyright.gov.
it? www.copyright.gov, and electronically register it, and you have all the verification that you need.
Yes.
Terrific.
But if I show them like a computer file that's dated by the computer that say like 2004 or something like that, that, you know, I have no way of changing that. Or
if you have a screen capture, do a date and time stamp and just save that.
Yeah.
Okay, one more thing. What about these websites that offer to do website design, which I don't look at because I'm always afraid that if I get a design idea from them, then they're going to search it, and they're going to come in and say, look, you looked at my website. I offered to do this for you. Now you're copying what I'm doing.
You're talking about a web page layout?
I'm talking about, like, you know, occasionally I'll get an advertisement, and they'll say, well, you know, we want to design your website. And what they do is they put together a website for you. But I figure if I don't look at those, I'm not going to be accused of getting some idea from them. And if I look at them and, you know, say, oh, I like this idea, but then do it myself and continue it on, I'm afraid they're going to, you know, go back and...
No, I don't think it's a problem. You can't. First of all, you can't copyright ideas. Second of all...
Or layouts.
Yeah. And most graphic design is not copyrightable anyway, so it really isn't...
And most of those websites are just... They're
template websites, you know, and they just do variations on a given template.
While we're on the subject, when people call, when people, you know, they advertise these things, let us do your website for you.
Right.
There's always an issue as to who owns the website, whether you then own it or whether the people who did it own it.
Depends on their terms of service.
Exactly. All of this is negotiable, and you know, if you purchase the rights to that, then you own it.
But usually, on GoDaddy and stuff, they own the website.
Yeah, it's got to be pretty explicit that you own the copyrights to the website.
Or put another way, read the small print.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Hey, Frank, thank you for the call. Appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Yeah.
Bye.
Okay. Let's go to Elizabeth in Egremont. Okay, Elizabeth, you're on.
Hi there. I do calligraphy, and there's a charming little poem by a poet who's now dead, and I would like to render it in calligraphy and sell it.
How dead? Well, how long dead?
He died, I think, you know, in the early 20th century.
Before, like, 1928?
I don't know.
Yeah, if you can figure out when the poem was first published, if it was published before 23, the work's going to be in the public domain, and you can do whatever you want with it.
So basically, if it was in print before 1923, I'm free to use it however I wish?
Yes.
Okay, it's in
what's known as the public domain at that point.
Okay, and if he died at, or if the poem was printed before after 1923, what should I do?
It's hard to tell if it was done between 23 and say 62, whether or not it's going to be in the public domain or not. You might want to check published versions of it for copyright notices.
Mm. Okay.
And if it's still being covered by copyright, then you'd have to either get a hold of the publisher or the estate of the poet.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
One last question, Elizabeth. Did you go to a public or a private college?
I went to a public college, University of Maryland.
Then you said the word poem wrong. You said poem.
Well, my mother from Texas used to pronounce it poem.
Yeah, poem. That's right, poem. That means you went to a private college. You say poem, you went to a public college. Sorry. Talk to you. Thanks, Elizabeth.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right. Let's go to Michelle in Windsor, Massachusetts. Michelle, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a bead artist, and I've invented a way to kind of build a three-dimensional structure in beads, mm-hmm. sort of a basket with like an interwoven bottom. Mm-hmm. And I do sell the tutorial on Etsy.com, but is that what would be more appropriate for this actual structure? It's not the pattern of colors or anything like that. Would it be a patent or a copyright?
Boy, this gets into the gray area because I think you are edging towards traditional craft, which mm-hmm. is not
it's
copyrightable.
C-R-A-F-T. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry. Or it's not patentable either.
Might be. Okay.
A traditional craft?
Yeah, I mean, if it's something that no one's ever done before.
Well, then it's not traditional.
No.
Yeah, I haven't. No one. Yeah, no one else has seen.
Anything like this.
I keep being told, wow, that's so original, et cetera, et cetera. And I'd hate, especially now that I'm selling a tutorial on how to do it on Etsy, I'd hate to see someone else, you know.
You can copyright the tutorial.
Yeah, absolutely. Copyright the tutorial.
And, yeah. Okay.
And at least at that point, no one, you know, is going to be able to go out and take your tutorial and have people do it. Yeah, but you might... Would it be worth her talking to a patent attorney about it?
Well, a patent would give you the right to stop anyone else from using that process, and by selling a tutorial on how to use the process,
you're kind of, I guess,
that's true. Yeah. Yeah.
I think you might, you know, pick one.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So probably copywriting the tutorial.
I would definitely do that.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, but then if someone just decides they can make it without the tutorial, and then they start selling these things, would there be any recourse?
Not really.
Right. Okay.
I mean, this is a problem that all kinds of designers run into. Clothing, accessories, you know.
Right. Okay. I just was wondering if there was any options like that.
Thanks
Good
again,
luck.
Michelle.
Good luck.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your information.
You know, that's very interesting. The whole business of selling over these internet sites like Etsy or some other places, out of Hudson, by the way, now. I believe so.
Yeah.
So the question is. There are all these things about this microphone's over here. All this stuff about protecting yourself. Again, there are terms and conditions and things that are written into there when you sign up. Most of us just say agree.
Right.
Yeah.
Sometimes
right.
that's a mistake.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right.
Very often it's a mistake.
Okay, we have two free phones. Let's go to 1-800-348-2551. Janine. Okay, Janine, you're on.
Hi, how are you? I'm calling from New York. I have a question, and actually this has something to do with the last question. I'm a jewelry designer, and I have a web page, and every time I put up a design, a jewelry designer that I do know that actually works with me in my real job in this world copies the exact design and puts it immediately within a day or two.
Nasty.
Yeah. It's hard because I have another career besides my jewelry design. And immediately, like, I'm putting out my spring line, and I really want to wait because I know she will copy it immediately. I mean, exactly. And is there any protection? I know,
spiking her, like, coffee.
Hey, Janine, have you ever talked to her about it?
I avoid it because it where I do work, which I don't want to mention.
Come on.
It has nothing to do with my job. So it's outside of that. I work in a hospital. So I really don't want to bring it up to her. I've avoided her, which is fine, because we don't work in the same department. But when I noticed that there were, I mean, some of my friends have said, this is it's the replication of your work. I've sent her an email with no response, just once, you know, good luck with your career. I thought but I just wanted to know. I've had friends who are attorneys, not obviously in this field. And, I was listening and I said, let me give a call to see what protection I would have.
Yeah, no, it's tough enough that someone's copying your designs, but then when you bring the workplace dynamic into it, it really becomes impossible.
Right.
I mean, it may or may not be copyright infringement, depending on your design, but it is unethical. And, I think the only thing you can do is call her out on it.
Well, what about the possibility of attempting to register some of these designs?
You could, yeah.
And then have a friendly or unfriendly copyright attorney send her a cease and desist letter when she comes out with the copies.
Okay.
There's no such thing as a friendly cease and desist letter.
Well, I was being a little facetious there, but, you know.
And I would do this through copyright.gov?
Yes.
Correct.
You'd register, yeah, and you would...
You can gang all of your jewelry designs into one application.
Yeah, and I could I could recommend an excellent copyright attorney for you if you were interested.
Yeah.
That would be great.
He's sitting in the room?
He's sitting to my left.
I know,
yes.
Janine, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Have a good day.
Good luck.
Good luck.
That leaves one free phone open to you, and let's go to David in Cambridge. Okay, David.
Hello. Hi, everybody. First, I have to confess, I called you last month, and I think my question, which is vague even to me, I think may have been bandied about and at least somewhat answered in this so far in this show. But I'm the guy who's designing the alternative energy vehicle that's basically based on a 1930 design. So patenting it is kind of like patenting the buggy whip.
Yeah.
But it's unique because, well, I've taken this design, that design, Henry Ford, Henry Royce, and put them all together in this wonderful package. And so that would be, it's something that you really can't patent because a lot of this stuff has been around for 100 years. So it probably would be a copyright thing. Now, I suppose the other question would be, before I make a quick comment, is how much scratch does one have to pony up to in order to copyright these? What would be a collection of mechanical drawings, top, bottom, front, back? Do you scan that in the computer and send it to copyright.gov?
Mm-hmm.
How does one do that?
Yeah, that's basically what you do. You make an electronic submission. And it's called a deposit. And I don't know, without seeing the work, if you could do these as a group registration.
If they're
like
all
it.
For the same
If they're
item.
All for the same.
Okay. It's for this, yes, it's the same. It's the same general object. In this case, an automobile. So here's the side view. Here's the front view.
Yeah. Okay, wait, David. We're running out of time before we have to go take this break for a second.
It's $35.
$35.
Ah, okay.
And what else? And is there a second part of the question?
Right yes. The word. The worst 80s video of all time. Three words. Harden my heart.
Cool. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
You're welcome, guy.
Right, I'd say. And we will be right back, and I mean right back. William, Steve, Thomas, Susan, and anybody else. Stay right where you are.
Support for WAMC comes from the Blue Rock Restaurant, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Chef Chris Ramirez, creating new American cuisine and handcrafted desserts, wine and beer from local to worldwide, live jazz Fridays, thebluerockrestaurant.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences of all ages for the Capital District and beyond, 518-580-8080. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art, Facebook or visionexceleyecare.com. And the Beechwood Group of Wells Fargo Advisors, LLC, serving not-for-profits and individual investors, Mary McDonald, Financial Advisor, and Joseph Steininger, CFP, Financial Advisor, thebeechwoodgroup.com.
Are back with our wonderful panel, and let's go right to the phones. All five phones have been ringing off the hook. Everybody has a poem. Let's go to William in Manhattan. William, you're on.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Chartok. Panel, I'm a independent television executive producer, and I've created 33 theatrical treatments for pilot shows. For broadcast, my question is, I know that I have to register these shows with the Writers Guild of America.
Yes.
My question is, should I also copyright the shows? And in the event that I have to copyright these shows, is it a possibility that I could group them all together as one copyright to save a lot of money? And if I cannot do that, how much does each copyright cost?
Each copyright would cost $35.
Okay.
But have they been produced, or are they just still in script form or treatment form?
Thank you for asking. They're in development in script form at this present time. I do have some, 99% of them actually have working titles, you know, at this point. So I'm just finishing up on the theatrical treatments of the last of them, the remainder of them, I should say. And do you go along with the Writers Guild of America? Is there any potential of circumvention through the Writers Guild of someone just reading these and God forbid, you know, circumventing me in some way, shape, or form?
No, because that's why the Writers Guild accepts these things. It's sort of a quasi-copyright protection. But I think you would want to register the copyrights for them. Whether you do all of them at once or them one at a time is up to you. You get slightly better protection if you do them one at a time, because otherwise then your entire body of work is considered one work. Rather than 30 separate works. The other thing you want to be very careful about is make sure you have work for hire agreements from everyone involved in creating the program, that that they agree that these are works made for hire. So none of the
Producers Guild could help you with those questions.
What does that mean? So, I'm sorry, what does that mean, work for hire?
That means that none of the people that work on the film have no vested copyright.
I see, because otherwise they're going to say he took all my ideas.
That they're entitled to a royalty.
Well, they're going to say, that I own the copyright to the script or my performance.
Art direction.
William, I wish we could give you more time. There are a lot of people behind
you,
and we want to make sure everybody tries to get in. Okay? Thank you very much.
Doctor, thank you so much. Okay. God bless you guys.
Okay. So here's a internet question. I've been in business for 11 years. I was recently told by a customer that another person is using my business name with a different spelling and reputation to further their own business. Is there any way to stop that person? Thank you, Kate in Colony.
Yes, that's a trademark violation. And I think I would contact an attorney with expertise in trademarks and...
And you have common law rights. You don't have to be.
It doesn't have to be registered.
You don't have to be registered, and a slight misspelling isn't going to matter if it's clear that they're you know, basically ripping you off.
Okay.
It would also help if your business was in place before their business.
Right.
That would help a lot.
Help yes. a lot. Okay, Stephen Walden. All right, Stephen Walden, you're on.
Thank you. Great panel, great show. Really appreciate the show. I'm a teacher here in the Hudson Valley, a high school science teacher, and I have a question about sort of educational fair use and also intellectual property. You know, I painstakingly put together lab activities in particular, which are required by the New York State for kids to be eligible to take a Regents exam. And many of these are my own originals, and they've been crafted and, you know, field tested in my own classroom. And, you know, in the interest of the new teacher evaluations, APPR, things like that, things are getting a little more competitive. And this used to be, when I started 20 years ago, a highly cooperative industry, but it's getting a little more competitive and people are trying to protect themselves a little bit. And I was wondering, you know, since sometimes if a kid is entering a class from another district, they have to bring their lab reports with them as evidence that they did the time. And also, if I have a student that's leaving to go to another district, they would be taking my lab reports with them as evidence of having spent the time in lab to be eligible for these standardized exams.
Okay, so Steve, the question is, what to do?
Do I have any intellectual property rights for these documents that I have created?
I think you should claim.
Yeah.
I think you should claim that you
absolutely.
Do.
Absolutely.
The school district may have different views, but there's a widely. I mean, it's not written down anywhere, but there's a academic exception to things like curriculums that that teachers own them, and so yeah, I would register
and,
the copyrights.
Most colleges, particularly here locally, support that. SUNY actually has a written policy about that.
Yeah, as well they should.
Yeah.
Okay. So what does he have to do very quickly?
Register it.
Just copyright.gov.
Copyright. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you
very
much.
You can gang register all of them for the one fee.
$35, Steve. Bye.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Let's go to Thomas in Barrington. Thomas in Barrington, you're on.
Hi, panel. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. I have a quick question. Over the past several years, I've developed sort of three concepts for some games, some outdoor games. And I think I may have made a strategic error in that I copyrighted one of the concepts' instructions, and I'm not so. And I guess what I'm worried about is if someone takes a look at those instructions, would they be able to develop the game themselves by altering the directions in a certain way? And should I be patenting those games as well?
Yeah, games are. Games are funny, but I
is it a board game, a video game?
It's an outdoor game.
Oh.
It's an activity, correct.
I wouldn't worry about the fact that you've registered the copyrights that someone is going to find them, because these are not, submissions to the Copyright Office are not online.
They're not searchable.
In order to find them, you're going to have to go and go through some warehouses in Arlington. I mean, it's not something that is readily findable, so I wouldn't worry about that.
Well, ever since I've copyrighted it, I've been getting spam mail from publishing companies. So I'm just wondering if that...
I don't think they're connected.
Great.
I think it's coincidental.
Or
it's
they might
not.
See your name and address, because that stuff is online.
Yeah,
understood.
But the actual thing you submitted isn't, so I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Hey, Thomas, thanks for the call. Appreciate it very much. Okay, we'll go to Susan in Shelburne Falls. Susan, you're on.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I successfully trademarked my logo and name for my service business, and I occasionally get in the mail offers to protect my copyright for $360 a year.
Yeah.
Is this something valid or is it a scam? The other part of my question is, what can I do to protect that name and logo, because it's a very catchy one.
Have you registered the copyright? There is a difference between owning a copyright and registering
trademark.
It.
We're talking trademarks, right?
Trademarks.
Okay.
I know.
So say, help those of us who don't know what you're talking
you've
about.
You've registered it with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office?
I went through a lawyer. She charged me about $2,000, and I've gotten, so it's done.
I guess.
$200, piece of cake.
I think it's overdone.
No, fucking it.
But,
They're just fishing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you're not going to get any additional protection from those kinds of folks.
Yeah, those people that are sending you notices, those are basically scams. And you're warned about them when you register. Actually, you go on the USPTO site and they tell you that people, and basically they just go and they harvest all of the names and addresses of trademark owners and send this stuff out. And it's annoying. So I would ignore it.
What do I need to do to protect my copyright now?
Just keep using it.
Your trademark. Okay. When you see someone using something similar, send them a nasty gram. Put the R with a circle next to the logo every place you have it out there. And that's about all you can do.
But you do want to keep using it. I mean, that's important.
But
What did you say about registering it?
Well, this was discussing copyright, but your logo is trademarked, which is a different thing.
It's trademarked, yes.
So, but anyway, basically, whenever a creator makes something, it is they automatically are invested with the copyright in that thing, in that expression of their idea. However, you have a limited set of protections should someone infringe on that copyright. In order to protect yourself in a deeper, broader sense, you need to register the copyright with the government. That's what the difference is.
And what do I need to do to that?
You don't need to do anything. You're covered by the trademark.
Well, if you wanted to register the logo, if it's a graphic,
they may not be able to. How
does she register the trademark?
She already has.
Yeah, that's USPTO.gov.
Okay, great.
Her lawyer that she
got
shelled out. Yeah, should have done that.
Susan, goodbye. Thank you very much. Yeah. Let's go to Sid in Weston, Vermont. Okay, Sid. No, that's not Sid. Andy in Marlboro, Vermont. Go ahead, Andy. I'm sorry.
Hey, hi there. Thank you, panel. I have created a variation on a poker game, and I'm wondering if that's something that could be copyrighted.
It would be a patent.
A patent.
Wouldn't it? Because it's a process.
It's a game again, though, right?
Yeah, it's a game. I don't know if there's a whole lot you can do other than, you know, put out special cards and sell the directions, but, you know.
Copyright the directions?
Yeah.
Yeah, possibly. You can't.
Yep. Or name it after yourself and then go make personal appearances. There you go. Which is actually a viable thing to do. You take credit for being the inventor of this game, and you get your revenue that way.
But again, this might fall under traditional folk knowledge.
Kind of, yeah.
Well, although it's a permutation of two games that nobody's ever thought of before, that it involves organization, and you can't do it. You would need 30 players.
Yeah, the problem is not the originality of the concept. The problem is what you protect. It fitting under one of the various forms of protection that's available.
And I think Polly's right. If it fits anywhere, it's patent. But I'm not aware of anyone ever patenting a card game.
Andy, next time, call earlier. Thank you.
This is why I called. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Bye. Yeah. Okay, we're going. What? Did I do something wrong? No. Okay. Let's go to Sid in Weston, Vermont. Okay, Sid, you're on.
How exciting to be on Vox Pop.
yes, we find it.
Well, it is.
So.
It's the highlight of this heavy winter for this gal.
All right.
Here's my question. Years ago, I'm a musician, and I sing and play all over the world and record, and I put a song out that I co-wrote with an esteemed colleague who is a big shot, and I have noticed, and it's been pointed out to me many times, that he's changed the name of the song, and it's been in major films and a couple of TV shows, and he calls it a different song. It's given it a different title. It's the same song. He just took my vocal off.
Wow.
And it's been chapping my hide for some time now, but I thought this intelligent panel might be able to shed some light on what's to be done. Is it possible to
Paul's email address at the end of the show.
I'm pretty sure I know who you are, and I'm a huge fan. It's unless there's something that we don't know, like you got the copyright for the lyrics, but not the melody. But it doesn't sound like that. If you were co-writers, you were co-writers, and you're basically getting ripped off, it sounds to me.
And I don't want to, you know, make him mad or anything. I haven't seen him in years. Maybe I'm not the person you're thinking of, Paul, but I hope I am.
Is he involved in, like, big movies?
Yes, these have been used in some pretty big films.
Is his first initial T?
Oh. Gosh, no, actually, no.
Okay, well, then okay, then we don't have a situation. But,
you might want to contact Paul.
Okay, listen, Sid, I wish we could give you more time. We're almost out of time. I thank you so much for your call.
I'm grateful for the call. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Sid. You know, I always think of Johnny Cash and Can the Circle Be Unbroken, you know, and he took it and he made it his own. Thank you. I'm supposed to be the professional, and I keep talking over there, and the microphone's over here. Okay. All right. Hi, is it possible to copyright register a slogan? Yes or no?
No.
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 You can trademark a slogan.
Okay, that's that one. Okay. All right. Now, moving the microphone right over here, we're going to go to Pam in Lake Hill, New York. Okay, Pam, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
I created a puzzle. It's a jigsaw-type puzzle, like a child's puzzle would be, in a tray. It's a completely different process than normal puzzles as far as making it. I don't know whether to copyright it or patent it.
Copyright the image.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, copyright the image.
And you could probably copyright the pattern of the cuts, but we're back with the poker question again. Is it patentable? And I think you're on the cusp of whether it is or not.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, if it's just cut out with a jigsaw.
The cut is what makes it unique.
Yeah.
Well, the pattern of the cut or the...
Yes.
Okay, that would be copyrightable. But, I mean, only, you know, maybe if you used a laser that channeled quasar energy, you know, that could be patented, but... But not, you know, not something that's just cut with a jigsaw or a laser. You know, you could patent the cut lines.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And
it sounds like you're really sort of on the fringe. If you talk to a very, very creative patent attorney, and good luck finding one of those. I'm sorry. I've got a lot of very good friends today. But maybe, you know, it's really fascinating to me that, but you're really in that area where it's
I think just the picture on the top and a schematic of the cut lines.
That's going to give you some protection.
That'll give you something, yeah.
Okay. Listen, I got to let you go. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I wanted to go back for just 1 minute to that earlier question that we had about the can you copyright a slogan? Is it possible to trademark my slogan? What I need to put a TM sign next to the top.
Yes, you could put a TM sign whenever you're using something, whether you're registered or not. When you register with the federal government, then you're allowed to put the little R in a circle.
Okay.
Next to it. But even without registering, you should put a TM next to a slogan or a trademark.
You all get 33 seconds to say anything self-serving you want. Polly, you first. 33 seconds.
I'm having my first solo exhibit in New York City at the Julio Valdez Project Space at 176 East 106th Street, opening March. Thank you. I'm scared to death. And it opens March 23rd and runs till April 20th.
That's your 33 seconds. Paul Rapp.
You can reach me at paul@paulrapp.com.
Okay, and so, you know, if somebody has a legal issue, they can come to you that way.
They can come to me that way, yes.
Or if they want a band. Okay.
Or if you want to hire my band, yes.
Bill Westwood, the
second.
And
you can take a look at my new website, my medical legal website, at westwoodmedical-legal.com.
westwoodmedical-legal.com. Okay. Well, that's great. Well, everybody, we are out of time. It's unbelievable because it really went fast. It always does when you guys are here, and we really appreciate your coming in. When I find the here it is, no, that's intro one, outro, there it goes. We're just about out of time, I want you all to know. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Hunt, Peach and Castleton Dental, providing general and implant dentistry to Pioneer Valley families for 30 years in the heart of Amherst on Amity Street, of course. Hunt and Peach, dental.com. And Mass Mocha, North Adams, Massachusetts, presenting Body Head, Sonic Youth founder Kim Gordon and Bill Nace in concert on March 15th, massmocha.org, the Daily Hampshire Gazette, 225 years of providing news and information for Hampshire County, gazettenet.com. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us today. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Thanks to Colleen O'Connell, our wonderful volunteer answerer, for answering the phones today. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Alan Chartok. On tomorrow's program, it's the Science Forum. Stay tuned now for a news update.